The eldest Baudelaire was lying on a gurney, which is a metal bed with wheels, used in hospitals to move patients around. This particular gurney was as rusty as the knife Klaus was holding, and its sheets were ripped and soiled. Olaf's associates had put her into a white gown as filthy as the sheets, and had twisted her legs together like vines. Her hair had been messily thrown over her eyes so that no one would recognize her face from the daily punctilio, and her arms hung loosely from her body, one of them almost touching the floor of the room with one limp finger. Her face was pale and empty as the surface of the moon, and her mouth was open slightly in a vacant frown, as if she were dreaming of being pricked with a pin. Violet looked like she had dropped onto the gurney from a great height, and if it were not for the slow and steady rise of her chest as she breathed, it would have looked like she had not survived the fall. Klaus and Sunny looked at her in horrified silence, trying not to cry as they gazed at their helpless sister.
"She's a pretty one," the hook-handed man said, "even when she's unconscious."
"She's clever, too," the bald man said, "although her clever little brain won't do her any good when her head has been sawed off."
"Let's hurry up and go to the operating theatre," the hook-handed man said, beginning to move the gurney out of the room. "Mattathias said the anaesthetic would last for only a little while, so we'd best start the craniectomy."
"I wouldn't mind if she woke up in the middle of it," the bald man said with a giggle. "But I suppose that would ruin the plan. You ladies take the head end. I don't like to look at her when she's frowning like that."
"And don't forget the knife," the hook-handed man said. "Dr. Flacutodo and I will be supervising, but you two will actually perform the operation."
The two children nodded, afraid that if they tried to speak, the two henchmen would hear how anxious they were and become suspicious. In silence, they took their places at the gurney, where their sister lay without moving. The Baudelaires wanted to gently shake her by the shoulders, or whisper in her ear, or even just brush the hair away from her eyes, anything at all to help their unconscious sibling. But the two youngsters knew that any affectionate gesture would give away their disguise, so they just walked alongside the gurney, clutching the rusty knife, as the two men led the way out of room 922 and through the halls of the surgical ward. With every step, Klaus and Sunny watched their sister carefully, hoping for a sign that the anaesthesia was wearing off, but Violet's face remained as still and blank as the sheet of paper on which I am printing this story. Although her siblings preferred to think about her inventing abilities and conversational skills rather than her physical appearance, it was true, as the hook-handed man had said, that Violet was a pretty one. And if her hair had been neatly combed, instead of all tangled up, and she had been dressed in something elegant and glamorous, instead of a stained gown, she might indeed have looked like an illustration from Sleeping Beauty. But the two younger Baudelaires did not feel like characters in a fairy tale. The unfortunate events in their lives had not begun with "Once Upon a Time," but with the terrible fire that had destroyed their home. And as Olaf's associates led them to a square metal door at the end of the hallway, Klaus and Sunny feared that their lives would not end like a fairy tale, either. The label on the door read, "Operating Theatre," and as the hook-handed man opened it with one curved glove, the two children could not imagine that their story would end with, "Happily Ever After."
End of disc